When something goes wrong and you've just got to say something, a lot of people immediately go blue. But those who can't or won't swear can get pretty creative with their language. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our English language expert Patricia O'Connor will be here. Pat is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. Today, we'll talk about mild euphemistic oaths, or the things we say when we don't want to say what we're really thinking. We'll explore the history of some of these odd-sounding epithets, and we want to hear about your favorites. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. When I was a kid, my grandma Nebbe would get upset about something and she would yell, "Cripes!" This hour, we're going to explore the origin of some of our favorite mild euphemistic oaths, and our English language expert Patricia O'Connor is here to help us do that. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm glad you mentioned your grandmother.
Well,
I'm sure a lot of people will have grandmother epithets to call in about.
Absolutely. And that was, as far as I can recollect, her only one. But boy, she said it a lot.
It was cripes.
Cripes, yep.
Well, you probably know what that's a euphemism for.
Well, yes.
Yes.
But a lot of these euphemistic oaths that we use are religious in origin.
Oh, sure. Now, you have to remember that for a long time, well, it's mentioned in either the second or third commandment, depending on how you count them according to sect, but thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. That was very seriously observed and still is, actually. I always think about when Scarlett O'Hara says at the end of Gone with the Wind, "As God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again." That would have been something very strong for a Civil War era lady to say. But expressions like that, essentially swearing before God that something is true, date back to early Old English. But exclamations or oaths using God's name aren't considered polite or ladylike. They're considered profane. Profane means outside of the temple. So if Scarlett had decided to mince her words a bit and be a little less dramatic, she might have said, "By George," you know, to avoid committing blasphemy. Now, actually, I've been asked by people, who is the George in the expression "by George"? And it's not George III or any real George, George Gobel or whatnot. The answer is no one in particular. But since the 1500s, the name George has been used as a euphemism, as a substitute for God in oaths, along with words like golly, gosh, jeepers, and jiminy. Now, lots of these expressions arose from a desire to avoid taking God's name in vain. And there are so many of them. I'll just mention a few. Egad, bedad, which is a good one. That's Irish in origin for by God. Then there's dadgum, good golly, gall dang it, doggone it, by gosh, and by golly. Gosh darn it, dag nabbit, gee whiz, gosh a mighty, jeepers creepers, and dozens of others. And George isn't the only name used in what are sometimes called minced oaths.
Well, I can think of one.
Which one?
For Pete's sake.
Yes, for Pete's sake.
Who is Pete?
Yeah, that originated around 1900 in American slang. Is a stand-in for the name God, and also for the love of Mike, which arose at about the same time. Now you have to have watched old black and white movies, I think, to have heard "for the love of Mike" before. But it used to be popular.
You know, it's funny how these things bubble up in your psyche, though, because mm-hmm. You know, when I had kids, and sometimes, believe it or not, kids can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I found sometimes the need to say things, and of course I wasn't going to swear in front of my kids. And so for the love of Pete became something that I said often, channeling, you know, my friendly neighborhood 80-year-olds, I guess.
Yeah, you're channeling your blasphemy.
Right.
Now, the name Godfrey has been used this way for quite a while, too. Well, since around 1900, as in my Godfrey, good Godfrey. And this is appropriate since the name Godfrey is derived from Old High German German word Gott for God and Friedu for peace. But if you're a fan of old W.C. Fields movies, as I am, you may remember that one of his epithets was Godfrey Daniel. He first used that in a 1930 movie called The Golf Specialist. But you can almost hear him saying it, Godfrey Daniel.
Well, you know, it's interesting because some of these are very similar mm-hmm. to the words that mm-hmm. they're standing in for. Some of them are not similar. I mean, gosh darn mm-hmm. is pretty close, whereas Jeepers Creepers is not very close.
No.
And
another one is Jiminy Cricket.
Right.
Now, I think that the people at Disney should be aware that the word Jiminy, which was often used in mild expletives, was a euphemism for Jesus since 1803, long before the cricket in Pinocchio was named Jiminy Cricket.
So it didn't start with Pinocchio.
No, it did not.
The cricket Jiminy, came in?
Yeah, true. Jiminy Cricket even predates the cricket in Pinocchio, who was named Jiminy Cricket. But the word Jiminy comes from an even older oath, Gemini, which was derived from a Latin expression, Jesu Domine. And 19th century expressions like Jiminy Cricket, Jumpin' Jiminy, Jiminy Christmas, you may have heard that one, and Jiminy Cripes, all originated as mild swearing in mid-19th century exclamations.
So how were these phrases thought about when they were introduced? I mean, were they mm-hmm. pretty racy?
Well, yeah, they were considered kind of racy. Exclamations like that were still considered swearing. They were also considered, some of them were considered slang, which was almost as bad as swearing to properly brought up 19th century children. My grandmother used to say good gravy, which, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, is a euphemism for good God, something she would never have said. But, in fact, the OED says that in exclamations that begin with the word good, the second element is often a euphemistic substitute for God. And these include good gracious, good land, good golly, and so on, euphemisms for good God or good land or good Lord. And even the word goodness is sometimes a euphemism for God in exclamations like goodness knows, for goodness sake, and goodness gracious. Oh, and by the way, I should mention the words good and God are etymologically unrelated. A lot of people
really
seem to think they're connected, but they're not related. But these are all things that, you know, people wanted to swear, but they wanted to swear acceptably.
And so saying goodness gracious, I have a hard time imagining anybody ever disapproving of that. But
yeah.
I could be wrong.
Well, I think that you might find that in some 19th century writings, it might have been considered slangy to say that. I don't know if the characters in a 19th century novel would have identified goodness gracious as a religious euphemism. They might have just identified it as any sort of exclamation. And there was a time when any sort of exclamation like that, a nonsense exclamation, was considered grammatically unacceptable, bad English, you know, because it was nonsensical.
Right.
So there are couple of different strains in there, the slangy, nonsensical strain and the irreverent strain, although I doubt if a lot of 19th century school marms would have known about the irreverence behind good gracious. They might have even said it themselves.
Right. Well, there are so many different things that people have said, and it's, of course, often not what you say, but how you say it.
Yes.
Marlene,
when you hit your thumb with a hammer.
Right. Well, Marlene shared on Facebook, she said, "Oh, mercy," or "give me strength," were two of her grandma's favorite mild phrases.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
Of course, those, I mean, that sounds as if she's praying, but I'll bet that's not how they were said.
Yeah. Right. But some of the older examples of camouflaged profanity sound pretty funny today. And are completely unrecognizable, like odds bodkins, which I'm sure you don't hear a lot of that today, or gads bodikins, or even gads budlikins, which were used in 16th and 17th century English as substitutes for God's body. Now, we don't even say God's body anymore.
Right.
And another one.
And they sound... I don't know, almost more naughty because they're so unfamiliar.
I think it's because it's probably a reference to either the sacrament of God's body or the crucifixion. For instance, there's zounds, which you don't hear anymore, but it meant by God's wounds, and z'blood, which meant God's blood. So those were a little bit, obviously there are crucifixion references, and, you know, we don't hear them much today, but at one time they were used a lot. In fact, I have a particular favorite, Gad's Bobs. Don't you wish we could bring it back?
Well, I think we should try.
You know, it was used by William Congreve, the Restoration playwright, in his plays. For instance, here's one line: "Gads Bobs, does he not know me?" Now, Congreve also used Gads Bud for the same purpose. Gads Bud, Gads Bobs. I like Gads Bobs better.
It does have more of a flair to it. We
yeah.
want to hear your favorite mild euphemistic oaths this hour. And if you have questions about some that you remember hearing but don't understand, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dave on Facebook mentions that his grandma said, "Oh, you're full of prunes." And I don't think that had a religious basis, but sentiment is certainly clear.
We understand what that was euphemistic for.
Right. Yes. And then his grandpa always said Judas Priest and cockamamie.
Cockamamie, yes. I used to know the origin of cockamamie. It's not a religious euphemism, but it used to be an adjective, cockamamie, for something slightly off.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. You can join us 866-780-9100. With me today, our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor. Pat is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. And she blogs at grammarphobia.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here today. Pat is the author of Woe Is I. She's also a blogger at grammarphobia.com. This hour, we're talking about mild euphemistic oaths, and we want to hear your favorites. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And boy, there are a lot of people who want to share these. So let's start with Suzanne on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. I thought there were a lot of male mild epithets, so I was thinking of Heavens to Betsy.
Oh, yes.
But
right. That's no... That's no particular Betsy, by the way.
Well,
go
I just
ahead.
Thought, yeah, it does stand in for, I don't know what it stands in, but it fits the bill for something. Mm-hmm. But the other thing was the word kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle. Let me see.
Kerfuffle. And I had a birthday party where I asked people to bring me words instead of presents. And somebody gave me that word, and I looked it up, and it's, I think, as my memory serves, it is something you say when you want to swear, like when you, oh, kerfuffle.
That's so interesting,
right,
because I've heard kerfuffle used in place of talking about a fight or an altercation. There was a kerfuffle.
Yeah, it's a domestic row, and it's a variant of a Scots word. Originally, it was a Scottish word, kerfuffle. Often, the prefix ker was used before something to give it a sort of comic twist. But they think that probably there was a word fuffle, and kerfuffle was for a row. And it's not a very old word. It's only from the mid 20th century, kerfuffle.
Interesting.
Yeah. But by the way, the caller who called about cockamamie.
Yes.
I was able to look that up. I knew it was something complicated. But cockamamie is a variation of a word, decalcomania. You can see why I forgot it.
Yeah.
Decalcomania, which was the process of transferring something as if with a decal, you know, transferring an image onto your skin like a fake tattoo or onto a wall. Decalcomania. And decalcomania, obviously, it was something fake. It wasn't really painted on. It was from a transfer.
Okay.
So cockamamie was a slangy short form of decalcomania. Cockamamie meant something fake or shoddy or not quite as good.
Wow. Well, that's a much more polite term than I would have guessed, actually.
Yes.
when Suzanne mentioned Heavens to Betsy, you know, she's
no
famous
particular...
just like Pete, but...
right. There's Heavens to Murgatroyd is another one.
Right.
Heavens to Betsy, the name Betsy was just stuck in because it fit.
It sounds nice.
Yeah, right.
All right.
It's no particular. It wasn't Betsy Ross.
Suzanne, thank you so much for your call. Valerie's on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. Yeah, I have a friend in Los Angeles. She's a first grade teacher, and she was kind enough to teach me for working around children, oh, shiitake mushrooms, and oh, Crayola. And now that I work around kids, well, those have been really helpful.
Oh. Yeah.
Parents like them too.
Yes, yes. I wonder if the one about the mushrooms fools any of the kids, though.
Right. I was going to say that could be surprisingly close.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You know, you could always say, I meant to add that to my market list. I just remembered.
Right.
And thus far, I've fooled every first grader I've needed it to.
That's good. I like Crayola a lot. That's really wonderful.
Right.
Me too.
All right,
this is
Valerie.
Such a fun topic.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100. This is from Tony in Cedar Falls. My mother was born during the Great Depression, and she frequently would curse with pee-picking criminently and flibberty gibbet.
Yes, flibberty gibbet is just a slang word for somebody who's just flighty.
Yeah.
What was criminently in there?
Yep, criminently.
Yeah, criminently and cripes are Christ euphemisms. Oh, criminently, or that sort of thing. That was a euphemism. Although, you know, the people who use these, I'm sure they don't think of them that way now. When you say, oh, jeepers, you know, I'm sure that people don't think, oh, euphemism for Jesus.
No.
They don't think that anymore. But I'm just talking about how they originated, in case anyone out there is offended that I'm saying that he's being blasphemous.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Eric is on the line in Dallas Center. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Hi. And you don't have euphemisms. You had a whole other language to deal with.
Yeah, my grandfather was Bohemian, part Bohemian, and he used to say, suckle-a-menskly, and then every once in a while, suckle-a-menskly clucks. Nobody ever fully translated it for us. You know, they just told us he was swearing at us or something.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if it ever came across anything like that.
Well, I wish I could tell you what those meant.
Even though if you could, you probably couldn't say it on the radio, right?
Well, exactly. That was what I was always afraid of. But.
Oh, Eric, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
866-780-9100. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I love criminently. I've heard variations, crime and enemies, which is kind of an interesting stem from there. But, I have a lot of these, and I enjoy them all. I've taken to using, you know, even though I'm not a Russian, I like to include Bolshevik sometimes when I'm in a discussion and variations. But
oh.
Works nicely. Sounds intelligent. The reason I actually called was because I was listening to all of the expressions that employ one side of the religion, and then I was thinking about the other, because here comes the devil. You know, we've got a lot of expressions that include Satan and hell and all of those things. So
that's
I thought you'd
true.
Like to expound on that.
Well, yeah, actually, my grandfather, to avoid saying hell, would say, "What the ding-dong?" Now, grandmother was saying good gravy, and he was saying what the ding-dong. Now, I don't know if they just said them that way in my hearing, and they used the real thing among themselves. Who knows? But, yeah, what the ding-dong was a way of saying what the hell. But there are a lot of those. And Nick, the word Nick is sometimes used as a substitute for Satan or the devil. Or,
really?
Oh, Nick. We don't hear much of this stuff anymore, but it was very popular in Victorian times.
You All right.
see this stuff a lot in Dickens.
I've seen it. I never thought twice about it.
Yeah.
I've got a couple here about, and Dean Borg actually brought me one. He said that his son picked up What the Sam Hill at home, and then was heard saying it in church, and they had to say don't say that in church. But that's right along the lines of the things that Jim was talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Sam Hill is a good one. Yeah.
And Diane wanted to know about What the Sam Hill, but I think we just answered that. But also, we brought up Judas Priest earlier, and she's wondering about the origin of that.
I think it's an oath. It's a euphemism, but I'm not sure specifically what it would be for. Let's see. I do have the OED up. I don't know if it'll be in here, but since it's two words, I have a feeling that it's euphemism for, euphemistic alteration of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like so many of the others.
So many others.
And and Dean Borg also brought me another one that he used to hear when he lived in Florida. He knew a woman who would say, "Why, I Swanee."
Oh. To avoid saying, "I swear"?
I don't know.
Oh, huh.
He doesn't know either.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good ones like that. Darcy's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Darcy.
Hello, good morning. I've got a euphemism that I picked up from cartoons on Saturday morning as a child, and it was Scooby-Doo. And I believe it was Velma that used to exclaim, "Jinkies!" And I thought that was safe to say, but I don't think it really should be or would be if you looked up where it came from, which I'm sure it was a form of blasphemy in saying Jesus, maybe.
Oh.
The other one that seemed safer, though, was one of my home ec teachers in school used to say, "Tough bananas." And that was one that I thought, I like it. It seems safe enough, right?
Yeah. Well, you've probably heard Jumpin' Jehoshaphat.
Yes. Yep.
This was a 19th century American phrase in which the biblical name Jehoshaphat, who was a king of ancient Judea, was substituted for the name of Jesus or Jehovah. So that dates back to just before the Civil War. At some point, it seems that the Americans took over these expletives and started adding to them madly.
My son, who's now an adult, at the time when he was two, would say "Fudikata Munimana."
Hmm.
2 years old, but I remembered, and it sounded good.
His own formulation. Does he still say that?
So, no. I remind him sometimes. No.
Oh, Darcy, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for the laughs. Have a great morning.
Well, bye-bye. It's interesting Darcy brings up jinkies. I recently saw an article about television shows that created their own swear words, because obviously they couldn't swear on the television show, so they would come up with something to put in the place of that, and some with more success than others. And Scooby-Doo, I guess, on a gentle level.
I never thought of Scooby-Doo that way, but gee, maybe it is.
I guess I've never heard jinkies outside of Scooby-Doo.
I never heard jinkies either.
Well, we've talked a lot about oaths that come to us by the way of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And Mike in Dubuque has a question that I think will take us somewhere else. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question about?
Oh, my mom just has this expression. She says, oy vey.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like an exasperated sound.
Right.
I was just curious what language it is, how you spell it.
Right. It would be spelled O, usually spelled O-Y, and then a space V-E-Y. And this is from Yiddish. And oy vey means alas or woe. And also in Middle High German, the word vey meant woe. So, and Yiddish and German are very closely connected. So, oy vey means oy, alas, or woe is me. And it is used to express grief, horror, or pain originally, but now it's used more or less humorously. Like, oy vey, I ruined the brisket, that kind of thing.
So and there are a lot of Yiddish phrases that people use as mild oaths that I'm sure a lot of people who don't have any kind of Jewish ancestry use them too, which I don't know how annoying that is to people who come by it honestly.
Right, right. Oy vey was actually recorded in the 19th century as the great Eastern European waves of immigration came to the U.S., all these expressions from Yiddish entered English, and whole books have been written on things that came into English from Yiddish. So it's very interesting.
Well, and I find we were talking about the Bohemian phrases earlier. Mm-hmm. There are just a few phrases from other languages that seem to linger from our ancestors. I think about ufta, which is pretty common here in this part of the country.
Yeah, sacre bleu. Well, you probably would hear that in French Canada, more likely. But there are a lot of those. And these expressions exist in all languages, by the way. I was going to mention that oaths that invoke the name of God, whether as euphemisms or not, exist in practically all languages. And they existed long before the Judeo-Christian religions. And a couple of our more old-fashioned exclamations in English, by Jove and by Jupiter, were actually handed down by the Romans, in which they were religious oaths. In Latin, these exclamations would have been pronounced pro Jovem and pro Jupiter, because Latin had no J. But the Romans weren't using these euphemistically. They were actually invoking the name of their supreme deity, which in Old Latin was Jovis, and in Classical Latin was Jupiter. Now, Jove or Jupiter. This is the same god that was Zeus to the Greeks.
Interesting. So when we say by Jove, we're going way back.
We're going way back, yeah. And the by Jove and by Jupiter entered English in translations from Latin, and they just stayed the way they were. They weren't translated as by God or anything. They passed into English this way. Now, of course, they aren't euphemistic religious oaths in English, but they were originally in Latin. Now, in later Latin, in post-classical times, some common oaths were Deo teste, as God is my witness, and pro de amore, for the love of God. So even in medieval Latin, there was swearing with the name of God.
Interesting. Mike is on the line next in Ames. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi. What's your phrase?
My father used to give us a phrase to basically deride us when we weren't prepared for something. And he said, the day of the wind, you want the scallop. And I never knew where that came from. I had a friend that tried to find the origin of it, and it just, you know, he hasn't been able to. I wondered if your guest would know where that might have come from, or if she's ever heard it before.
And can you give us an example of how your dad would use it?
It was like basically if you hadn't done something that had to be, and you were like you wanted something done that would take some time, it was like you couldn't expect to have something done that took time to do it. The scallop in his way was like a windbreak. Scallop was like a windbreak, and like when you wanted something to break the wind, it isn't something you just put up that day. It's like something you had to plant ahead of time and prepare and nurture so that, you know, when the time came, you'd have it. It was like basically the Boy Scout motto, say, be prepared.
Yeah. Was scallop a word for a windbreak of trees?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I never heard that word. Huh.
And I don't know if it was one of his own origin or if it was something that, you know, came from something. Because another one he used to say was, it's a great life if you don't weaken. And that came from a John Bucknan or whatever. It was like one of those kind of proverbs that would tell you'd be frustrated because you wanted something and he would, you know, give you one of those.
Right. Well, it almost has a biblical sound to it, as if on Judgment Day you want to be ready. You know, you want to have made your peace or whatever.
Yeah.
Huh.
So that's all I was just wondering, but I had a friend that he just went nuts trying to find out the origin of that thing, and he never, and I don't know where it was. It's one of those kind of deals where you don't know, you know, where your parents do some funny things to you, and you don't know where
right.
You know, I just found something that might be related to this, because when we wrote down scallop, you said, and I don't know if you spelled it or not, or maybe this is just how it got passed along, but S-C-O-L-L-O-P?
Yeah, that's the way I spell it.
All right, and that's a tool in Ireland, a rod pointed at both ends used to pin down thatch. So that would have something to do with the wind.
Yeah, to pin the thatch onto your roof.
To hold the thatch down in a high wind or something.
Right?
Okay. Oh, yes.
So I hope that helps you, Mike. I can't promise that's the answer, but.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. Maybe he had it wrong. I always thought he meant it was a windbreak, but maybe that was another way leading me on.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about mild, euphemistic oaths, the things that we say when we can't say exactly what we're thinking. With me, our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor. She is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com, and you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Holly's on the line next in Mason City. Hi, Holly.
Oh, hi there.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
You were talking about these kinds of euphemisms at the beginning of the show, and I thought of ye gods and great honk, which are used to good extent in The Music Man, which is written by Meredith Wilson from Mason City, of course. And I grew up in upstate New York, and we watched that movie, and my dad just put that in his lexicon right away, great honk. And then the mayor of the town responds to the teenagers using those phrases by saying, watch your phraseology. And so that, you know, that influence was felt all over the United States, if we felt it back east. So that's my two cents.
Oh, that's great, Holly. Actually, we just watched The Music Man in my home the other night, and my kids, why does she say egad all the time?
Yeah, it's a euphemism for my God or ye gods, or ye gods would be not, that would be the pagan gods, but it was... My God was the actual euphemism, and egad also was a popular one in Elizabethan times. Egad, so yeah. But honk, I don't know why that was stuck in there. I don't think it has any particular significance. It may be just.
It was pretty funny.
Yes, it was funny.
All right, Holly, thank you so much for calling. James is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, James.
Hi there. Yeah, I have a co-worker, and she can swear like a sailor, but when she was raising her son, she had to come up with her own swear. She wouldn't swear around him, and so she came up with cheese and rice. And another one she would do would be son in the ditch.
Well, that's kind of a Cockney thing, isn't it, Pat?
You know, I think it's everywhere. I've heard of cheese and crackers used by a lot of people, and for let's see how does this go? Sweet honey in ice. No, wait, sweet honey in the tea. Sweet honey in the tea. That's it. For as an acronym, you know, sweet honey in the tea.
Okay. took me a second.
Right.
You know, acronyms are hugely popular now. I mean, yeah. I think people often just say them instead.
Sure, yeah.
And especially with texting and all of that.
Yeah.
But James, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Eric in Des Moines next. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi, what's yours?
Well, my grandma always used to say fiddlesticks for her euphemism. So I was like, but my favorites were when my dad would, you know, hit his finger on something and he'd say, "Ah, oh, God, America," instead of the usual following of that. But then nowadays when I find my 6-year-old boy and his friend saying, "What the fudge," all the time, it really kind of grates at me. And
yeah.
I tell
yeah.
them that's a euphemism.
Yeah,
you are saying pretty much the same thing.
They may have heard that as a euphemism at home, used by mom or dad. And maybe mom or dad thought it was all camouflaged. But when the kid repeats it somewhere else, it's not so camouflaged.
Right. Well, and there are, in my children's school, they're not supposed to just say, "What the?"
They're not supposed to say, "What the?"
Right.
"What the?"
Right.
Yeah, right.
Because of what inevitably follows for so many.
The elision.
Right.
So obvious. The ellipsis.
All right, Eric, thank you. Even though a lot of the kids have no idea what would follow. But Eric, thank you so much for sharing that. Let's see. Let's go to Todd in Cedar Falls. Hi, Todd.
Hi. So I have two questions. One is, I'll be jiggered. That's something my grandma used to say back when she was alive.
Yeah, I would guess that it was euphemistic for "I'll be damned."
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, and then the other one, and if I used this one around certain people, it would get them all upset.
Uh-huh.
But it was if I used the term "holy moly."
Uh-huh.
And they seemed to think that that was calling on a god from the Mesopotamian area.
Well, it may have been for "holy Moses."
Okay.
Let's see. I'm searching here. M-O-L-E-Y, maybe?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If I shouldn't say it, I probably shouldn't write it.
I have to tell you, I say "holy moly" all the time. That's one of my favorites. When I don't say something worse. No, I don't find any entries for "holy moly," but...
Interesting. I always figured it was...
"Holy Moses."
Right. That's what I always guessed, but also just because it rhymes.
Yeah. And if it did have a reference to some Mesopotamian god, would your friends be offended?
Well, I do think because of their being Christian and that, their thought was that they shouldn't be calling on other ones. But, I mean, that was more when I was a kid, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. They seemed to think that maybe that was something the Israelites said. And I was
calling
calling
on a different god. Yeah,
something like that.
Interesting.
So,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
All right,
you're
Todd. Yep, thanks a lot for your call. And we have a lot of emails, so I'll read just a few of them right now. This one's from Kristen in Iowa City. My grandpa always used to use Jiminy Cricket.
Right.
And she says, we always thought of the cartoon character when he said it, and it got us cousins giggling.
Yeah.
From Lori, my father-in-law uses "Gosh, oh, Friday" when exasperated.
Yeah.
And she's wondering where that came from.
Well, gosh, any euphemism that includes "gosh," "gosh" was a euphemism for God. So, like, "gosh almighty" was God almighty.
And "gosh, a Friday" sounds a lot the same.
It sounds like God almighty. Yeah.
All right.
You got to take the cadences into account.
Well, this one takes us back to Jinkies and Scooby-Doo from Mary. It didn't take off in the general population, but a Disney show used "oh, pickles" for an exclamation of frustrations. It was commonly used by my 4 little girls who are now grown.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she also says, my husband's family will say "Jesus Christ" in Polish, which I can't say or spell.
Yeah, right. But, you know, pickles, I think that's just a totally innocent one.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a euphemism for anything. I know that in one of my favorite novels by Trollope, the young hero does something really audacious. And an old lady friend of his is so delighted with him that she says, "What a young pickle." one of my favorite quotes from literature. What a young pickle. And I think it was just her way of saying, you know, it's just something you can't come up with a good word for it. So use pickle.
Well, I remember hearing or reading somewhere where a family just inserted the word daffodils when they wanted to swear. So I've tried to get my kids to do that.
Yeah.
And
that
kind of catches on.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Randy's on the line next in Victor. Hi, Randy.
Hi, the neighbor says, I'll be jigged. Mork and Mindy, Mork says, shuzbit. And when you're an old pert, that means you're an old fart in the Czech language.
Ah. Yeah, the Mork and Mindy one, I think, the Shazam, was it Shazam or what?
Shazbot.
Shazbot, yeah. I think that's just, there are a lot of old terms from medieval times that were supposed to be invoking magical powers, like Shazam, and I think that's probably a variation on that. And
my mother-in-law used to say, oh, my stars.
Oh, yeah, my grandmother said that, too. Oh, my stars. Sometimes she'd say, oh, my stars and garters.
That's very funny.
I was hoping somebody would mention Great Scott, which is a wonderful old 19th century American euphemism where the name inserted instead of God was actually the name of a real person. And a lot of people have suggested it was Sir Walter Scott, but it wasn't. This was, according to the OED, it was the name of General Winfield Scott was inserted into that oath. Now, he was a revered hero of the Mexican-American War, and he ran for president in the 1850s. And according to a contemporary novel written at the time, a character in this novel says, "Great Scott," and then follows, "He gasped in his stupefaction," using the name of the then commander-in-chief for an oath, as officers sometimes did in those days.
Huh.
So Great Scott was a euphemism that stuck in the name of Winfield Scott as a substitute for God.
So unlike Pete and Betsy,
he
Scott
was real.
Is somebody.
Yeah, Scott was real. Doesn't often happen.
Oh, that is terrific. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Dave is on the line in Morley. Hi, Dave.
Well, good morning. See, I've got several of them. There was by Cracky.
Mm-hmm. By Christ.
Gadzooks.
That was Gad. Yeah. The Gad meant God.
Okay. Now, my grandma, when she was mad, she would pause, and then she would say 8, 9, 10.
She was counting to 10.
Yeah, well, then I kind of modified that because I'm a carpenter.
Uh-huh.
And so I would say 8, 9, 12. Now, that 8, 9, 12 is reference to the Pythagorean theorem, which is how you can calculate out a 90-degree angle. Okay? And,
mm-hmm.
and now.
So are you hoping that's going to catch on, Dave?
Well, I don't know. I usually say it, and these guys stop and look at me, and I have to tell them, you know, come on, you got to make a 90-degree angle. Now, you remember Bullwinkle, Rocky would say, "Hokey smokes, Bullwinkle."
Yeah.
And my grandpa,
he
would say H-E double hockey sticks.
Yeah.
And he would also, when he was really mad, he would say, "Mad dog spelled backwards."
Oh, Dave, thank you so much for sharing those with us. That's great. We've got
I have found Gadzooks.
Okay.
Dates from the 17th century. And it is the Gad is a euphemism for God. The Zooks is just thrown in there for good luck.
Interesting. All right, these are from Sam in Dubuque on an earlier theme. He said, in our house, we tended to creatively spell things. Sugar, honey, iced tea was the popular choice, as was fun umbrella cracker key. Also heard cheese and rice. And this one's funny, Christ on a bike, which Sam says does not seem much better than its alternatives.
Yes,
and I would agree with that. And a number of people have brought up when people give Jesus a middle initial, Jesus H. Christ.
Yes.
Where does that come from? That doesn't seem better than the alternative either.
Yeah, I don't know where it comes from. Some people have suggested that Mark Twain used it, although I haven't actually found it, and that it stood for holy, but it was just used as a, give him a middle initial kind of thing. And of course, that was not an official name. Christ was a title, the Anointed. So it wasn't even as if it was a name, an official name, first and last name. So I don't know where the H came from.
All right. I think this is also from Sam. He says, now with my kids of my own, we stole Wes Anderson's fabulous Mr. Fix expression, or probably fabulous Mr. Fox expressions by subbing in cuss for all other words. So cluster cuss, what the cuss, etc.
Oh.
This is from Matt in Ames. Land sakes, holy moly, holy buckets, holy cats, and for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. Those are all euphemisms. What was the one with sake? Cat sake?
Oh, land sakes.
Land sakes, for the Lord's sake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
This one is from Beverly. She says, we lived in England for 14 years and came across countless unfamiliar expressions. Right now, only two come to mind. A friend of ours had some very good, very amusing ones. As far as religious references, one of our favorites was Jesus wept.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
which is a Bible verse.
Right. The shortest one, right?
Yeah.
And Cockneys still say, gore blimey, which is a euphemism for God blind me.
Yes, God blind me. Yes. Strike me blind.
All right. Let's see if we can get in one more call. Let's see. Denny is on the line from Nevada. Hi, Denny.
Hi, Charity and guest. Mine is more of a phrase. My mother used to say Hector's pups and little fishes.
Hmm.
I think your mother was very creative.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
And my granddad used to say, down went McGinty to the bottom of the sea. I think it meant looming disaster, maybe. I don't know.
You know, by the time they got those expressions out, they probably lost their hot temper. You know, they'd given them time to cool off.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call. Back to email. This one says, when my mother-in-law was really upset, she'd spew forth with, for cat's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my mother used to say, well, I'll swan to Pete. And apparently she didn't even know what that meant. This one's from Chris. In Trinidad, we say, geez and ages.
Mm-hmm.
And from Matt in Ames, what in tarnation?
Yeah, tarnation is another word for damnation.
And great balls of fire.
Yeah.
And then here's another one that mixes some languages. This one's from Joel in Des Moines. Holy frijoles.
I like that one.
That is good. Any you're trying to bring back, Pat, that we should all try
That's
to work
Bob.
Into it? Okay.
Gad's Bobs.
We'll see what we can do on
okay.
this end, all right? Pat O'Connor, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Patricia O'Connor is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com, and you can find a lot of answers to your questions about language on that website, grammarphobia.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime. We'd love to hear your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show. We love to hear your responses to things you have heard on the show. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.